When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, you are listening to Proverbs with Daisy Maskell. It is me, Daisy. Welcome. This is a podcast all about extraordinary people and extraordinary stories. Here we will shine the spotlight on their journeys and hopefully learn something about ourselves and the way that we live our lives from their experiences too. Join me for the next half an hour as we get to know our guest. I am a massive fan of our guest on this episode. It's hospice nurse Julie, who educates us on the death and dying process on social media. She is currently using her platform to spread awareness, grant comfort and ease fears surrounding a conversation that is often really difficult to start. This one really gives you so much perspective on life. And if you've ever lost someone like I have, it can really provide you with some peace of mind. So I'm a massive fan of our guest on this week's podcast. She has been sharing her experiences on social media of working in a hospice, and I feel like she offers such a beautiful and comforting perspective on the end of life, and she's on a mission to normalise conversations surrounding death, which I think is really important. She's here to chat with us today. It is the one, the only hospice nurse, Julie. How are you doing?
Hey, Daisy. Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm well.
Oh, I am so happy that you're doing this. I'm so happy that you're on this week's episode. I think this is actually going to be a personal favourite. I'm a massive fan of the work that you're doing on social media. I think you're making a real, real difference.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I'll start off by asking you the question that I'm sure you get a lot. How did you get into your line of work, Julie?
Well, I'm a nurse first, right? So I know I say hospice nurse, Julie, but I started out in the ICU, which is intensive care unit. And I was there for most of my career. I've been a nurse for 14 years. I was there for about 9. And that experience where we're trying to keep people alive, right? And hooking them up to all types of machines to try to get their body back to quote unquote normal so they can survive really started making me see that that's definitely a place for some people, right? And then other people, I felt like we were almost doing a disservice after a while. It was kind of like, okay, when are we going to start having a conversation about this person will likely die no matter what we do, right? And if that's the case, how does this person and their family, where do they want that to happen? Do they want it to be in the hospital? Do they want to go home? You know, just even opening that conversation, because maybe they'll say, no, we do want to stay here. And if that's the case, then great. But I do think that conversation was just never had. And it gave me a passion about learning how to have it. So after 9 years of experiencing that, I am thankful, even though I didn't really enjoy being an ICU nurse, I'm thankful for the experience because it really made me a great nurse and gave me tons of knowledge to help me with what I'm doing now, which then I transitioned into hospice nursing, which is a whole nother realm. And I've been doing that for about 5 years. And I just been learning and learning and learning. And then I felt like what I learned is most people don't know about death and dying, including other doctors and nurses who aren't in the hospice and palliative care realm. So that's where I started the TikTok and Instagram thing. And here I am.
It's so true. I think it can be such a scary, strange thing to try and educate yourself on and to try and navigate. And I think unless you have had personal experience of, you know, someone close to you dying or going through that process, you don't really find yourself researching it on the internet. So I think it is really amazing that you are sort of sharing this knowledge on something like social media, which is, you know, it's accessible to pretty much everyone. What was
was your attitude towards death before getting into this line of work?
That's a great question. So I was always fascinated a bit about, I wouldn't say death, but maybe what happened after death, right? Like, where do we go? Is there a place? Is this just it? Is it not? And I don't really know the answer to that, but I've always been fascinated by that. So I think before my nursing experience, I was always a seeker of, like, you know, what are we here for? What happens afterwards? And really, I was never going into nursing to try to figure that part out. I just thought it was going to be a good career move. So since starting hospice nursing, though, specifically, I do think it's helped my fascination, and it's helped me be like, wow, we really are like magical beings. Our bodies, I mean, biologically, I'm not saying anything mystical. It's like biological, scientific, scientifically based, what I'm saying, that our bodies really are built to take care of us. You know, like we do have specific diseases that can really get in the way of that during the death and dying process, as far as like symptom management and needing someone there to manage some symptoms. But by far, what I've witnessed during the hospice process is that our bodies are like built to die eventually. You know, we have built-in mechanisms to help, to shut down certain things. So we don't feel hungry. We don't feel thirsty when we can't eat and drink. So before hospice, I was always fascinated. You know, after hospice, it's like, wow, I'm even more fascinated and more certain that we are built in a way that like we are able to survive birth, grow, and then die. And we're built for it.
How connected do you feel to your patients and their families?
Connected for sure. I feel like, but it's not depressing. Most people think because of that, it would be depressing, but really it's like, well, one, I try to have a detached connectedness, if that makes sense.
I was going to ask this, because I can imagine you probably have to stop yourself to a certain extent from becoming too attached and I guess too involved in the emotional side of things as well.
Right. Because you want them to have their experience. It's not about me. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it can turn into being about you when you're really involved, right? And your feelings and what are you, you know, and that's what I don't want. I want them to have their experience. I want to be like a safe space to kind of like keep a calm, you know, in the house versus like me being sad that I'm losing somebody, if that makes sense. It's more of a like, I'm there kind of just to facilitate. I'm like a facilitator versus like really, really part of it. Because I want them to experience it together and have their journey. And now specifically because of what my role in the hospice world has changed over the 5 years. You know, when you're a case manager, that means you have a caseload of patients and you see them all through until they die or come off service, which does happen. So you are really involved then, and it's easier to get more and more attached because you're there more often. Now I do mostly education and I see the families first and I spend like hours with them and I kind of set up their home and educate about medications and their specific disease. So in that time, I do get attached in the sense of like, oh, I really hope, you know, I just want to help these families, but then I leave and then the case manager comes in. So it's a little easier now to still obviously feel for them and feel attached to them, but it's more of a educational experience.
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, not only do you share stories that I guess are somewhat unexplained and philosophical, which I love. Those are some of my favorite videos of yours to watch. You also inform people of your work and about the dying process from a very factual, like you said, biological standpoint. And I think a lot of fears can be subsided through wisdom. So I'll go in with this one. This is kind of a biological factual question that we'll start off with. How does your body know and prepare for death?
I know. Isn't that amazing? It really does too. So I don't know how it knows. That's the mystery part, right? Like, how does it know? But I know that it does. And it's not just me being like, I know this, you know, we as a healthcare community know this. So for instance, most people who have let's give a cancer because it's common, right? So some type of cancer, right? You'll see weight loss. You'll see mm-hmm. weight loss and you'll see increased sleep. And then really towards the end of life, if this cancer is like a terminal kind and it's end stage, the body knows that basically like the drier, meaning the more dehydrated you are, which sounds horrific, but this is why it's amazing. It's like the body mm-hmm. knows it has mechanisms built in to be like, hey, this is the end of life. I'm going to die more peacefully if I don't eat and drink. And mm-hmm. it shuts off mechanisms in our body to make us want to eat and drink. So mm-hmm. hence why you lose a bunch of weight, and hence why people who love this person are like, hey, you need to eat. You need to eat to stay alive. And really that's not the case, because no matter how much food you gave someone who didn't want to eat, that if their body is shutting down, their body is shutting down. And that's mm-hmm. why I always say, let the patient's body be your guide, because our body knows somehow. And that's the mystery part. And maybe there is someone out there that knows why. I can't claim to know everything, but but that's, it's like there's built-in things that will start shutting down to say, you know what, I'm going to actually feel better if I don't do X, Y, and Z.
This is definitely something that I've seen firsthand. So my granddad, mm-hmm. he died of cancer, stomach cancer, actually, back in 2012. And honestly, me and my family, we say this to everyone. And I think people that don't really understand this, they look at us as if we're unhinged. But we mm-hmm. honestly say, having him at home, he was at home with us for about 2 weeks before he passed. We honestly say those 2 weeks were the best times of all of our lives. We had the best time with him. It was pure quality time. I feel like we all took away something so special from that experience. Yeah. I sort of saw everything firsthand. I saw a lot of what was going on throughout his treatment as well, just because we were super close. But that stage that you're talking about the sort of the body telling you and shutting down and shutting off certain processes, especially towards eating and drinking, I definitely saw with him. I remember us worrying that he wasn't drinking. And I remember we froze a load of ice pops and we were trying to give him them up until a certain point. And we had a nurse that was there watching over him every so often just to help out with palliative care. And they told us, he doesn't want this. This is not, you know, this is not something that is needed at this time. And I feel like that's almost harder for people that are, you know, loved ones that are around to understand. But yeah, it is really true. I've definitely seen that, you know, the body and the person that's going through this, they know what they want. And it's about listening to their body and monitoring, you know, that sort of experience. So I definitely can relate to that for sure.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you guys had that time together. That is amazing. Mm. That's the kind of stuff that makes me, yeah, it's just such a beautiful, and you know, it can be painful, you know, emotionally but also beautiful. I feel like it can be painful and beautiful at the same time. Yeah. It's like the greatest act of love for a family to do for each other, to be there during the uncomfortable times, to kind of sit with someone, even though you know you're losing them. It's just so beautiful. So happy. Thank you for being there for him.
So towards the, I guess, towards the final stages of death, Julie, what sort of steps or stages does the body go through, or do people go through when dying? Are there specific things that happen?
Yes. Well, I always preface it with everyone is different, because there are those few outliners where people will be like, that is not how it went for me. Right. And I totally appreciate that. And people really do die the same. You know, like you see very similar things across the board, all over the world, not in America or in Europe, or, you know, it's everywhere. So those things are, and this is the last, I want to preface it with, usually the last 6 months of someone who is taking the natural route of death and dying, which would be, even though they're dying from something, they're not doing any kind of interventions, right? So the last 6 months usually, so when it's at the 6-month-ish mark, it's a little more gray, you know, it's a little more vague. It's harder to tell like exactly when they'll go. But what you'll see at that mark is more sleeping and less eating. Those are the big things, more sleeping and less eating. Sometimes a little more social withdrawal. So maybe depending on their personality, they might be a little aloof or a little more just socially withdrawn. Not always, but sometimes people will say like, they're not really acting like themselves. Like maybe they're depressed, something like that. And then when it gets closer to like a month, we'll say a month or a few weeks out, maybe 8 weeks, you'll see a lot more functional decline. Like everyday activities will be kind of hard. You know, they used to walk around the block all the time. Now they're not leaving the house. Now it's hard just to get up to go to the bathroom. Maybe some accidents here and there. And definitely, again, more sleeping, less eating, more sleeping, less eating. And then around this mark is the benchmark mark where people start visioning, we call it. And not everybody, but I'd say like 80% of people. So a lot of people will vision and they'll have dreams of dead relatives, or they'll actually see them, or they'll speak to them, or and it can be like someone they don't know but that still feels comforting, or dead relatives, meaning their mom or dad or someone who has passed before them. Animals, sometimes they can say they see angels. It depends, but usually around that mark is when you'll start seeing that. So when someone says that to me, I usually know they have about a month left. So then it just kind of is the same stuff. Like it just increased, right? So more sleeping, less eating, more sleeping, less eating. And then once you start getting to the actively dying phase, which is like a few days to a few hours, almost every single person looks the same. And that's mostly unresponsive. Sleeping, I'd say 20 to 22 hours a day. No eating and drinking for the most part. And then once you're really, really close, meaning like definitely within a day or so, you will be changes in breathing, which confuses a lot of people because they think it's bad, but it's really normal.
And as long as it's quick, right?
Quick.
Yeah, I remember.
There can be like quick breathing and then pause. And then quick breathing and then pause, or really long pauses between each breath, almost like you have to watch to be like, are they still breathing? And then they'll breathe again. And people will associate that sometimes with pain and suffering, but really it's not. And how do we know? Is because how the person looks. If they look comfortable, even though they're breathing funny, they're okay. So changes in breathing and then changes in skin color. Also during this time, their temperature could change quickly. So hot to cold. Or cold to hot. And then the death rattle, which of course is actually called terminal secretions. But it happens right before death. So people call it the death rattle. And it just sounds like a rattling. Their breath can sound kind of moist and people hate it, but also very normal.
Continuing the conversation on Proverbs after this short break.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Something that you mentioned was the visions and the dreams. I remember this being something that we really lent into and we really encouraged as a family as well. My granddad, he was at home for 2 weeks, and honestly, they thought he was going to last a couple of days, and he had some really, really strong fighting spirit. And I would say for a good 10 days, he was great. He was almost reverting back to his normal self. He was absolutely hilarious. And we sat on his bed for hours and hours and hours. He always had a great sense of humor, but he was cracking the greatest jokes. He had the nurses that would come round and take turns in absolute stitches. He was really, really funny during that time. and then, I would say he fell into some sort of, it was kind of like a coma. I would say like 24 to 48 hours before he actually passed. But 2 days before then, that's when he was talking about seeing things. And he said that, you know, he would see geese and rainbows, and we would really encourage him to speak about that. And we'd really lean into it because we found that such a beautiful experience. Do we know why that happens at all, Julie?
No, I wish no. we did. I wish we I know, did, right? But it's, I know it's so, but that is one of the, that's the first thing when I started my TikTok and Instagram, that was one of the first things I wanted to tell people about, because it has, and I always, it never fails, right? Because those videos always are very popular. So millions of views, right? Which bring a bunch of haters, which is okay. I don't really care. I don't really pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. But what they think is, they think I am personally pushing an agenda that there is something after we die, right? Or I'm not. It is just something we have to educate. We actually educate our families about it, because it happens so often across the board that people will say, my dad needs medication, he's hallucinating, something's wrong. And then we hear what's happening. I'm like, oh no, that's normal. He doesn't need medication. As long as he's happy with it, we're good with it. And they'll be like, okay. Yeah. And whether it's an hallucination or not, we don't know, but we know it happens all the time.
No, I mean, you're there to inform. And I think, you know, through information that reduces people's worries and fears. And then whatever you want to believe that is beyond that, that is up to your own interpretation. We had sort of speaking from, I guess, more of a philosophical perspective now, we had so many signs the week after he passed. My nan, she lives about 2 miles, I guess, from the nearest lake. And literally a couple of days after he passed, there were geese that were all over her front lawn, staring up at her while she was putting on her makeup. And obviously we remember him talking about geese. And then we used to have this bell, which was from the war, from World War II, that my granddad, I think he must have inherited or was in his family house. And we gave him the bell to ring whenever he wanted something. And he would play around with us. So he'd be laying in bed when he was at home and he'd ring the bell and we'd obviously all rush up thinking that he needed something. And he used to joke around with us and just time how long it took for us to get up the stairs. Well, we actually heard that same bell ringing a couple of days after he passed as well. So I think it is all up to what you believe in and how you interpret certain things. But I know that, you know, that can certainly give people peace and comfort. And you know what? Who knows? It's the age old question, right? I think keep your mind open and whatever helps you through that grieving process, I don't think, you know, anyone is there to judge on. I guess this is a question that you probably get asked a lot as well. This is something that we were really conscious of too. But can you hear when you're dying, Julie? Can you still hear things that are going on, even if you are sort of in a comatose state?
Yeah, so we think people can. And the reason why that is because they have done studies with EEGs, which are like electrodes that go on the brain that can measure brain waves and what's happening. And they've noticed that the hearing part of the brain is one of the last things to shut down. So that's one of the reasons why we do think people can hear us, even if they're not responding. And then the second reason is because people who have not died, who've come, quote unquote, come back, which I don't really like using that term because they were never really gone. But like if they were, like when I used to work in the ICU, we would have people intubated and medically induced coma, just like if you were in a, like a dying, unresponsive state, who have been, you know, brought out of the coma and have gotten better and say that they could hear what was going on. And the good thing is when they could hear, because to me, that sounds kind of bad to hear what's going on, but you can't do anything about it. But they, I haven't really heard people say how awful that was. I've heard people say it was really comforting. They could kind of hear maybe like a little bit like it was underwater, but they could hear their dad's voice or they could hear their mom's voice, or they knew which nurse was on duty because of the different voices, or this nurse would sing to me, this nurse, you know. So that's why we think people can still hear us in some form. Yeah.
We were really conscious. I remember as he was about to die, and obviously, you know, you're, as you said, you're sort of aware of that exact moment. I remember us all standing around my granddad's bed, and we were all very conscious that, you know, we were all, as much as, you know, that's probably the most difficult time, because that is a moment where you are about to let go. We were all conscious that, you know, we weren't being too dramatic or traumatic, and we were just reminding him that he was loved, and it was, yeah, you know, we tried to keep an element of positivity just in case, you know, he was sort of aware of what was going on, in a certain sense. I feel like we've touched on this a couple of times throughout this episode, Julie, but are there any other things that you can think of that I guess still cannot be explained about the dying process?
I forgot to talk about the rally, which can happen during the death and dying process. So I was thinking about that when I was describing the shutting down of the body over 6 months. So the rally doesn't happen with everybody. I actually used to call it the surge, but then I think most people call it the rally. So either way, it's the rally, it's the surge, it's this thing that happens in about a third of patients, where I guess it was on a Grey's Anatomy episode too, because whenever I post about it, like 50 million people talk about Grey's Anatomy. So I guess they did an episode about it. But it's when someone is very close to the end of life, and then suddenly they have this burst of energy. It can look different for everybody. But they can almost look like they're getting back to their old self. And it's kind of like, whoa, like it's extreme enough that people think, man, maybe there's a turn for the better here. And then they die shortly afterwards. Okay. So to me, it's a beautiful thing if you know what's going on. It's a devastating thing if you don't know what's going on. And it's very specific, because when I make a video about it, a lot of people will say, oh, my loved one did this for a month. And I guess I shouldn't say it's probably not the rally, but it's probably not the rally, because it's very specific. It's like for a day or two, this burst of energy, and then they die right after. So that's something we can't explain. We see it enough that I always try to educate families before it happens, so they can kind of take those a couple of days and really enjoy them. And then understand that, hey, this might be the last, you know, the last hurrah. So let's just be here for each other, and maybe not. If they continue to do well, hey, I like it. But
yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think this next question that I'm going to ask you, I think you've discussed this before in a video, and I think it's actually one of your most viewed videos, but I'll ask you it for anyone that hasn't seen your video that you posted about this on TikTok. Have you had any patients connect with you after death?
Yes, I have had one. And of course, like, it's so funny. For some reason, I've always, you know, it's hard to talk about like mystical things that happen, right? Because one, I'm trying to be taken seriously, as a healthcare professional. So when something that's so unexplained but so powerful, I finally made the choice to be like, you know what? I'm just gonna tell people, because it was so powerful to me, you know, and it still has been. And I'm glad that people like the video, because it makes me feel validated. One. And I think people also, it goes to show that many people have had these experiences. So yes, I have had one patient who I still love dearly, obviously. I feel like, show me what it's like when you die. I can say that now in hindsight, right? When it was happening, I was like, it was just, I was in the moment, purely in the moment with this person in my head, not really knowing what was happening. Even afterwards, it was kind of like, what the heck just happened? You know, but it was, I tell the story in the video. I have a couple of videos about it on my TikTok. I've told it a couple of different ways, but basically this patient of ours was dying. I knew they were. I was in their home, and I could tell he was dying very soon. And I left my continuous care nurse there to be with him until he died. And I left, and I was in my car and just thinking about him and hoping he had a very peaceful death. And we were all very, very close to this man. And I was happy for him, really. I was sad, but mostly happy for him that we did a really good job. And he knew that. And he looked very peaceful. So I was just thinking about that, you know, and wishing him well. And then suddenly I could hear his voice in my head, and I could feel something, right? And now I, looking back, I think I could feel what he was feeling. But at the time it was like, I don't know what's happening, but I feel like this overwhelming feeling of like presence and freedom and release and joy. And just, it's almost hard to put words to it. That's how powerful it was. But it, if you could think of those, how those emotions feel, it felt like that times 10, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was basically just saying to me how wonderful it, whatever it is, how wonderful it is. I can't believe this. Mm. It's so wonderful. I cannot believe this. If I knew, because he wasn't afraid at the very end, but he was very alert and oriented through most of our time together. So we would have very philosophical conversations, just like you and I are having, about death and mm-hmm. how he felt and was he scared and, you know, what's it going to be like? And he was saying my name too, which gave me chills. It was like, he was going, wow. Like, oh my gosh, Julie, if I only knew how good this was going to be. You know, I just had no idea. It was like he was flying, which sounds kind of cheesy, but that's how it felt. It was mm-hmm. like he was flying and there was just so much joy and so much exuberance. And he was basically just saying, oh my gosh, if I only knew how good this was, if I only knew how good this was. And I was, of course, crying because I was overwhelmed in my car with what was happening. And mm-hmm. That lasted for like 20 to 30 seconds of him just mm-hmm. telling me how beautiful everything was. And how happy he was and how amazing it was. And then it stopped. And then my phone rang and my nurse inside said he had died. And I was thinking, I know. I just showed me what it was like. And I didn't say that, of course, because I was like, what the hell just happened? And yeah, I mean, that was probably, I was very new to hospice nursing. So that was at least 5 years ago. But even to this mm-hmm. day, it's like, that still means so much to me. And, has really, I wouldn't say like changed how I felt, because I kind of felt like that's how it would be, but it kind of solidified it, you know, and it makes me feel like, thank you for giving me that experience. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is so special. That is such a wonderful experience and story. So amazing. I love that. I absolutely love that so much. Julie, I guess I'll ask you this question as well, which I feel like we've answered, but for anyone out there that, you know, is still sort of skeptical, why do you believe that death is something that shouldn't be feared?
That's such a great question. That's so good. So I think I would start with this. It's okay to fear it. Like, I think mm-hmm. a lot of people resist, including myself, my mom and my, you know, I always joke, like, I'm hospice nurse Julie trying to help people normalize death. Meanwhile, I have a mother who, like, refuses to watch my videos. You know, not really. She's coming around to it. But, like, she, you know, so I think it's very normal to fear death, very normal to fear the unknown, very normal to fear all the things, losing your loved one, you know. So I think we should start there with like normalizing that and normalizing the fact that we do fear it. So we can not fearing it. I almost feel like the resistance of like, I don't want to talk about it because it's mm-hmm. is what causes the fear. Right. And I think mm-hmm. if we can start with like acknowledging, hey, I feel a little afraid. I don't like this. Mm-hmm. And then I say like, I know you're really normal. It's totally normal to be afraid of that. And yeah. Let's just start there. Because what I found is I did not start out this whole TikTok Instagram thing, to help with like, death anxiety and like true fear of death. There's so many people write to me saying, watching my videos has helped them not. The reason why we don't need to fear death is because there's a whole program. One, there's a whole program, I think, built into our bodies to help us do it. And two, hospice and palliative care is full of experts to help with that. You know, there's a whole community of people, I guess let's call them death workers or something, where we are experts in this field and we can help. Yeah. So it doesn't need to be fear. And I feel like feared. And the more we talk about it, the less and less I think people will fear it. I think it needs to come out into the open, just like birth. Just, I mean, you know, birth, people talk about birth, you know, it just needs to be in the open. We need to shine a light on it. And I think we're doing that.
You are doing it. And it's so great. I think, you know, of course, we're scared of things that are seemingly you know, the unknown. And there is, of course, there's so many questions that we still have about death and what comes after it that we don't know, and we may not ever know until it happens to us. But there is so much that we do know, and there's so much that you can educate on. And a lot of that stuff actually isn't scary. You can see there are elements of beauty that you can take from that experience. I think education and wisdom is key, as always. I'm going to ask you this question, Julie. This is always the final one of every single episode. I feel like you're going to have a great answer for this, though. With all that you've seen, what is your mantra in life? What keeps you going? What gets you up in the morning?
Oh my gosh, I have so many.
There's a lot of pressure on this.
I really feel like I'm just going to say my classic one, because it really is something I say and I remind myself. It has to do with hospice, but it also just has to do with life, right? Because hospice, death does have to do with life. So acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. And I feel like people are like, what? what does that mean? But I really do feel like acceptance, like if you can't get out of it, get into it, man. You're right. Mm-hmm. Like we can't get out of this life, really. So let's get into it. And if we are diagnosed with something terminal, which we all will be in some form, I guess, if I'm lucky enough to kind of know that I'm dying versus like a car accident or something. I feel like acceptance. It doesn't mean you have to like lay down and not do anything about it, but just this acceptance of what is, to me, has been a really great gift to myself. It helps me relax a little more, helps me not fight stuff so much. I can just sort of let go.
That is a great one. It's one to definitely put on a t-shirt as well. I can see you making a little merch line and a little money off of that. But for sure, I think, you know, it's a good thing sometimes to just exist in the space that you're in right now, good and bad, because you can learn so much about that experience and about yourself as well. And I think it teaches you strength and resilience. So I think that's a real, real good one. And I think we can all take something away from that and learn a lot from it. Julie, I have loved this episode so much. It's been so amazing to chat to you. Go and follow Julie on TikTok. She's doing some amazing work. Julie, thank you so much for being here. This has been one of my favorites.
Thanks, Daisy. Nice to meet you. It's been great.
And that concludes this episode of Proverbs with Daisy Maskell. That is me. I hope you enjoyed it. Hit subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes, and I will see you soon.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.